The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
You are what you eat. Now today, this is a familiar term that relates a general understanding that to be fit and healthy, we need to eat good, clean, what is referred to as nutrient-dense food. Now, along with this statement comes the notion that if you eat that which is not good, our bodies will not be fit, and we will be subject to illness and disease. The first to publish this phrase was a French author and a politician by the name of Jean Anthelme Brillat-Savarin, and I may have pronounced his name wrong. I apologize if I did. But he was famous as a gastronomist, which is the study of the relationship between culture and food. In 1825, he published a book titled Physiologie du Goût, which means the physiology of taste. And in it, he wrote, "Du moins ce que tu manges, je te dirai ce que tu es." Translated into English, "Tell me what you eat, and I will tell you what you are." 40 years later, almost, in an essay concerning spiritualism and materialism, Ludwig Andreas Verbach wrote, "Der Mensch ist, was er wird." So it's something that sounds German. I assume he's German. And basically, this translates into English, "Man is what he eats." Now, both of these statements convey the fact that the food one eats has a bearing on the health and also the state of mind of the individual. Now, the actual phrase that we are familiar with today didn't emerge in English until the 1920s or the 1930s. The exact time is not known, but it was used by a nutritionist, Victor Landlar, and he was a strong believer in the idea that food controls health, and he also developed what is known as the catabolic diet. Now, the earliest printed example of this phrase comes from an advertisement, surprisingly, from the beef industry. In 1923 edition of the Bridgeport Telegraph, the United Meat Markets wrote, "90% of the diseases known to man are caused by cheap foodstuffs." I think this is almost prophetic in a way. And then it says, "You are what you eat." In 1942, Lindlar published a book titled, "You Are What You Eat, How to Win and How to Keep Health with Diet," and this seems to be the vehicle that took the phrase into the public consciousness. Now, the concept of these statements embrace a partnership with health and with diet, and this is what we're going to focus on today. It's no longer a secret to any of us that what we consume greatly affects our bodies and our minds. This is well known to most everyone, and we have hundreds of studies that we can refer to and understanding that the link between our daily intake of food and either good or bad health is obvious. Now, this concept is taught in every school in the country. Every school, elementary to middle school, high school, and in college, this concept is taught. And despite what has come to be common knowledge in our culture, the majority of Americans still regularly consume high-fat, high-sugar, chemically-enhanced foods, while the organic and the whole food conscious are but a small minority. Now, one look at the bread aisle is testament to this. I mean, you walk down the bread aisle, and how many types of whole grain, organic breads do you see as opposed to the processed and rich breads? It's obvious what America eats today, the majority of America. Now, here's a few facts to boggle your mind as to what our once health-conscious nation has become. In 1901, the United States was the healthiest nation on the earth. 1901. In 1920, we were second. In 1950, we were the third healthiest nation in the world. And this is about the time that fast food kicked in. By 1970, we were the 45th healthiest nation in the world. And in 1981, we fell all the way down to the 95th healthiest nation on the planet. Now, this massive decline in health, it can vastly be attributed to fast food, to processed food, and to food additives. In 1970, Americans spent $6 billion on fast food. In the year 2000, we spent $110 billion on fast food. That is, we spent more on fast food than we did on computers, software, automobiles, and higher education combined. As we have become a fast-paced society, we have also come to demand a fast food, a steady supply of quick foods, and we have altered our lifestyles to the point to where we don't actually allow ourselves time to prepare meals. We have to grab a quick bowl of sugar-coated flour bits, also known as cereal, if you can call it that, grab a cup of coffee, and then head out the door to work. On the way to work, maybe we don't have time for breakfast. We'll grab a quick donut. For lunch, we grab a quick burger, French fries, and a Coke, and when we finally get home, we're so exhausted from the day that we put a frozen meal in the microwave and we sit down in front of the television for the rest of the evening. And that is the life of most Americans. And because our lives go widely unfulfilled, on weekends we want to play, and so we usually don't take the time to eat properly. And foods like pizza become a tasty way to enhance our entertainment. Fast food has become a staple of most people's diets, and it goes actually far beyond McDonald's and Burger King. Fast food is actually established in every single grocery market in this country. Every single market, through frozen meals, through canned goods, through instant foods, just add hot water and it's done, and through any energy bars and what is known also as energy drinks today, which is a big fad. And you wonder, why do we play into such things? It's because we don't allow time to take care of ourselves properly. I mean, why go through the trouble to soak beans for 6 hours and then cook them for another 2 hours when we can buy a can of beans that's already cooked? And of course, don't pay attention to the salt and the sugar and the host of other things that are put into the food. Why make a whole wheat pasta and fresh vegetables when this can take an hour or more, when we can just put a frozen meal into the microwave that's loaded with preservatives and salt, all kinds of processing additives? And why take the time to eat several pieces of fruit when we can drink fruit juice from concentrate that is loaded with high fructose corn syrup? Well, oddly enough, fast food is often cheaper than getting the real thing and preparing it at home. It's kind of strange how that works out. I mean, they put more into the food. They take more time to process it, and therefore it seems that they would have to pay more money. But for some reason, the whole organic foods are more expensive. This is odd, and it may sound odd, but this is not coincidence. It is because the food giants desire us to eat their foods. They want us to eat their foods and to become, in a way, addicted to their foods, addicted to the taste, addicted to the additives, and then society will continue to support their industry. Herbert Lay was commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration in the late 60s, and he stated this: "The thing that bugs me is that the people think the FDA is protecting them. It is not. What the FDA is doing and what the public thinks it is doing are as different as night and day." He ran the industry for a time. Now, there are several methods of creating fast food addicts, and of course, one of which we had mentioned is cost. Many times the quick meals are very inexpensive, and we become accustomed to certain lifestyles, and in order to support our living, we purchase that which is the least expensive most of the time. Another way is to tempt our taste buds by adding fat, by adding sugar, by adding salt. And these are what the human tongue enjoys. We like these tastes. We like these flavors. We are born, actually, with an inclination to choose foods that are fatty that are sweet and that are salty. And studies have shown that given the choice, small children will always pick the candy or the salty cracker, the enriched food, over the high fiber, good for you foods. Chemicals are another way to cause addicts. Sugar and salt, as we had mentioned, are very addictive. We get used to the flavor. This is what we desire. Anything else doesn't really satisfy us. It's what we want. Another additive is MSG. It was labeled as a food enhancer and is still labeled as such, but this actually stimulates brain activity in a way that the person desires to eat more of the product. Now, this was removed from most foods several years ago. There was a big deal about it. MSG-free. It was like people were putting it on their labels. Restaurants were advertising it. No MSG. But I think if you would look at the labels of the food that we might be buying, it's being added back in. It's back. Sometimes they kind of hide it, where they'll actually put in part of the ingredient of MSG. So we got to be aware of what it actually is that we're looking for. One of my favorite snacks is Triscuits, whole wheat, good food. But I found out that they've come out with a variety of flavors now, and one of them, which sounds really good, olive oil and rosemary. I mean, those are two really good things, right? Olive oil, we know that's healthy. Rosemary, there's nothing wrong with that. You look at the package, monosodium glutamate, food enhancer. Now, I'm fairly glad that I looked at some packages of other Triscuits, and they do not have MSG, so at least that's not taken away from me, at least not at this time. Caffeine. Caffeine's another additive that's very addictive. It's natural, of course, we know in coffee and in tea, but they're putting it in products so that we become addicted to their products. And many people nowadays, they rely on caffeine to get by. They use it as a tool to do work. Some can't even have a decent day without having it. And then there's other sweeteners, and studies have shown that things such as NutraSweet and aspartame are both highly addictive and also very bad for us, causing neurological problems. But the companies continue to use them while denying such claims. David Kessler was also commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration from 1990 through 1997. And he confirms the insidious nature of the food industry, stating, "The combination of fats, sugars, and salt are used by food manufacturers to trigger a bliss point in the human brain. This is a point where we find great satisfaction in what we are doing, and we will continue the act in order to remain in a state of bliss." And so this beguiling of food manufacturers, it has caused and is causing great damage to the health of this nation. Currently, 63% of Americans are overweight. 31% are obese. Over 36 million Americans have diabetes. Approximately 23 million have heart disease, and more than 65 million have hypertension. And there's also untold numbers of other health-related problems that can be directly linked to what we eat. Dr. Ron Colbert, who's written several books on this subject, states this, "I strongly believe," and this is a man who has doctored many people, he has a practice, he's seen what comes through his medical rooms, "I strongly believe," he says, "that fast food and dependence on processed foods is the primary cause of widespread and serious diseases, including obesity, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, attention deficit disorder, gastroesophageal reflux disease, gallbladder disease, diverticulosis, diverticulitis, arthritis, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia." And then he says, "Almost all other diseases can be included in this list as they have direct links to that which we consume." And so, in the next several years, it's estimated that 1/3 of all adult Americans will be obese. That's approximately 85 million people, not just overweight, but obese. Brethren, America may be the most overfed and undernourished nation in the history of mankind. Let's turn over to Genesis in chapter 1. Because our current state of health is not entirely the fault of the consumer, I want us to think, does this mean that we have no choice but to eat what they present us? I don't think it does. We have been deceived and persuaded to believe that our diet should include lots of sweet, salty, processed, preserved junk food. And at times, we actually may have even had to choose between eating right or paying the electric bill. But we still have a choice. And we as God's people, I believe, should be more conscious to discern between that which is good and that which is bad, that which we put into our bodies. And we should always strive to choose that which is most beneficial. And with this in mind, let's consider a question that is in the minds of every Christian, or at least should be in the minds of every Christian. We think about this daily. What would Jesus do? And in this case, what would Jesus eat? Would he belly up to a triple Whopper burger with three kinds of cheese, a large batch of fried potatoes, and a 32-ounce Coke, which, by the way, has 30 tablespoons of sugar in it? Would he have regular helpings of chocolate bars? Would the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob vote for overly salted, sugared, preserved, processed canned goods over fresh fruits and vegetables? Now, common sense, of course, tells us no. And with this in mind, what should we eat? Are there biblical examples of what we should consume? I think there are. There's actually several, and I'd like to go over a few today, beginning in Genesis. And after the first 5 days of recreation, God came to the culmination of his divine construction, and on the sixth day, man was made in the very image of his Creator. In Genesis 1, in verse 26, and God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the flesh of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." And so God gave us dominion over all other animal and insect life in the world. Was this dominion over fish, animals, birds, and insects given so that man could eat any and all creatures that he wanted as much as he wished? No, it was a dominion of intellect that was given to us. And through our ingenuity, we can subdue all other creatures. In other words, we can outsmart them. And so what was man then designed to eat? In verse 29, and God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat," or for food. And so here God explains what was meant to be man's primary source of food. It was to come from the herb bearing seed, the tree yielding seed. In other words, I think we all understand, it's fruits, grains, vegetables, legumes. Now these divine gifts were not only given to mankind, not us only, but to all the beasts of the earth as well. As you see in verse 30, it says, "And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat." And it was so. And so I'm not trying to promote the idea that we should all become vegetarians. This is not the case. Vegetarianism is in no means wrong, as pointed out by Paul. And many might find great benefit in that kind of diet. But by God's command, we see that we are to eat meat at times. I mean, we're instructed to eat it during the Passover. And there is the parable of the prodigal son, where the father kills the fatted calf. However, these are special occasions. They are momentous events. And killing the lamb or the fatted calf was something done as in a celebration, as marking something as special. But today, most Americans kill the fatted calf every single day of the week, and sometimes more than once a day. And I don't think this is what God intended. Now, another example that meat can be eaten was that Cain was a keeper of sheep, indicating that sheep may have been consumed. But it seems to me that the primary reason for early mankind to keep flocks in this way was not solely for their meat, but was to make clothing, was to make tents and blankets and a multitude of other uses that can be made from the fur and the skins of animals. In addition, when giving the law of the unclean and the clean meats, I don't believe that this was a command that we had to eat meat. God didn't say that you must eat these clean meats. Instead, I believe there are guidelines for what may be eaten. In other words, we can eat meat, and if we're going to do so, here's a list of what can be consumed, and there's also a list of what we should not eat, because it's just unclean. It's just not good for you. And so Paul, as I had mentioned, refers to the vegetarian as being weak in the faith. Now, this is only meant that the vegetarian did not understand that we are allowed to eat meat, that we can eat flesh. And there is actually a benefit to consuming meat. But just because we're allowed to eat it doesn't mean that it has to be done every day. I believe that God's first instruction to mankind that we just read in Genesis 1 shows us that our primary source of food should be fruits, vegetables, grains, and legumes, which falls into that category of the herb-bearing seed. Fruits and vegetables are high in essential vitamins, minerals, and fiber, and they also contain what are called phytochemicals, which not only fortify our immune system, they are known to combat illness, disease, and infection. And I was told by a college professor in one of my nutrition classes that scientists still don't understand what many of these phytochemicals are and exactly how they work. Fruitsandveggies.gov states that almost everyone needs to eat more fruits and vegetables. They are critical to health care. Substituting them for higher calorie foods promotes weight loss, and to get the amount that's recommended, most people need to increase the amount of fruits and vegetables they currently eat. These God-given gifts of food in fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, and legumes cannot be underestimated how valuable they are for our health. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy in chapter 8. I want to focus on one of these herb-bearing seeds, which are just a little bit here. One of the most popular items made from grain is bread. Now, bread is mentioned over 330 times in the Bible. Now, sometimes I understand it's simply a reference to food or that which can sustain us, but a large percentage of the time, it is referring to actual bread. Now, when God is speaking to Israel of the promised land through Moses, Moses states this in verse 6 of Deuteronomy in chapter 8. Let's pick it up in verse 7. For the Lord thy God brings you into a good land, a land of brooks, of waters, of fountains, and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil olive and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills they may dig brass. And when thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Eternal thy God for the good land which he has given thee. And so here I believe God gives a small list of what he considers to be good, healthy, beneficial food. It includes wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, and he mentions bread. Now, the bread of biblical times was much different than most of the loaves that we see today. It was a coarse, whole grain that was much darker in color. It was heavier than the breads that we eat today, or at least most of them. There is a brand out there called Ezekiel 4:9, and it's sold in many stores. And this is probably more like what Israel and even what Jesus would have eaten during his time, except at that time it was usually baked in smaller portions because it was easier to carry when going on journeys. Now, the point is that the bread of biblical times was organically grown. It contained whole grains. It wasn't enriched with anything, any kind of additives. It didn't need it. They did not have processed sugars at the time. They weren't added in, and none of the valuable nutrients were removed. So most bread today is vastly different than what they ate. Consider the fact that only 1 ounce, 1 ounce of wheat bran has only 60 calories, and yet it has 12 grams of fiber, only 1 gram of fat, 410 milligrams of potassium, and 5 grams of protein. 1 ounce. Now, is this what we get out of one or two slices of bread today? Not hardly. And this is largely due to the processing of wheat for its whiteness. And in case you are not aware of how this process takes place, I'm going to briefly explain it to you, because if you're not aware of this, you're going to be surprised. And so the processing of whole wheat bran into white flour takes approximately 20 steps. 20 steps. The wheat kernel itself, if you looked at one, it's composed of an outer layer, and this is called the bran, and this is extremely rich in B vitamins, minerals, and fiber. Well, this is stripped off. The next layer is the wheat germ, and this is the sprouting portion of the kernel, and it is also very rich in vitamins B and E. This is also removed. And now in these two steps alone, 80% of wheat's nutrients have been stripped away. 80%. Now the last layer, the inner portion of the kernel, is known as the endosperm. It's the starch or the food supply for the sprouting seed. It's much lower in B vitamins and mineral content. And this is what is used to make the refined white flour today. Now, the milling process of the endosperm involves very high temperatures. And the remaining part of the grain is, of course, damaged by oxidation during this process. And at the end of the refining process, the flour has a grayish color to it. And because of this, it would be very offensive to sell a gray flour to people, right? Nobody would purchase it. And so a chemical agent such as chlorine dioxide, acetone peroxide, or benzoyl peroxide is used to make the flour white. Now, this bleaching process destroys even more of the few vitamins and minerals that remain. In all, the milling and bleaching process today removes some 22 important nutrients from the grain. Now, because of this, in some cases, bakeries will place approximately 4 of the nutrients back into the flour. And this is so they can, that you'll notice that on the label it says enriched flour. That means they've put about 4 of the nutrients back. However, the vitamins they use are usually coal tar derived, which is a known carcinogen, and so there's actually very little benefit to enriching any of the flour. Let's turn over to Matthew in chapter 7. Brethren, our daily bread was never meant to be as it is today. It was not supposed to be processed to the point of little benefit. It was not to have 22 God-given nutrients stripped off and thrown away. It was not to be laced with sugars and preservatives and coal tar. Now, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gave us some examples of things that are actually considered to be good gifts. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob considered these to be good gifts. And he stated that whosoever comes to him sincerely inquiring for a good gift, they shall receive it. And in Matthew 7, in verse 7, he says, "Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asks receives, and he that asks, and he that seeks finds. And to him that knocks, it shall be opened." And so then Christ gives us an illustrated example of this truth. And he says, "What man is there of you, whom if his son asks bread, will he give him a stone?" And so Jesus pointed out that if one of our children were to come to us and ask for bread, what would we give to them? A stone? Of course not. We would give them good food out of love, out of concern for their health and for their well-being. Now, bread was therefore considered a good gift, and it certainly was good at the time Christ ate it. But is this same bread good today? Well, that's debatable. It depends. Is a loaf of white bread considered good food? Well, I suppose if you're starving to death, it might be considered good food. But in the scope of what has been done to the grain used to make it, you're almost better off having a stone. Maybe you can knock yourself unconscious and be done with it. Now, some may think that eating a slice or two of processed, enriched bread a day made in this way, it's okay, you know, I'm fine. But I ask us to consider that this processed grain is used in a wide variety of products. There's hamburger buns, hot dog buns, cookies, crackers, tortillas, bagels, cereal, pasta, pretzels, and the list could go on and on. It's very extensive. Let's turn over to John in chapter 21. Now, another example of good food that was given during the Sermon on the Mount is where Jesus asks, if a man's son asks him for a fish, would he give him a snake? Now, obviously not. Well, first of all, snake is considered unclean meat. But also, a snake could possibly be poisonous. So this is definitely not a good gift. A good gift would instead be the fish. Now, Jesus actually, he acted out these two examples in the Sermon on the Mount after his resurrection, when he appeared to the disciples on the shore of what was likely the Sea of Galilee. And in John chapter 21, beginning in verse 2, there were together Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. And Simon Peter said unto him, "I go fishing." And they say unto him, we'll go with you." And they went forth and entered into a ship immediately. And that night they had caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples didn't know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said unto them, "Children, have you any meat?" And they answered him, "No." And he said unto them, "Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and you shall find." And they cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of the fishes. So Jesus gave them a multitude of good gifts at this point. And therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved, and I believe this is referring to John, says unto Peter, "It is the Lord." And now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girded his fisher's coat unto him, because he was naked, and he did cast himself into the sea, and the other disciples came in the ship, and they were not far from the land, but as it were, only about 200 cubits, and dragging the net of the fishes with them. And as soon as they were come to the land, they saw a fire of coals, and there were fish laid thereon, and bread. And Jesus said unto them, "Bring of the fish which you have now caught." And Simon Peter went up and drew the net to the land full of great fishes, 153. For all that there were so many, yet the net was not broken. And Jesus said unto them, "Come and dine." And none of the disciples did ask him, "Who art thou?" knowing that it was the Lord. And Jesus then comes and took the bread and gave to them the fish likewise. And so here we have an example of Jesus preparing a meal, giving his disciples something that was good to eat. He gave them bread and fish. Now, was it processed, extracted, and then enriched bread? Not likely. Was the fish deep fried, smothered in tartar sauce? I don't think so. It was cooked on a fire. So the point is that fish is good food. It was likely a staple of Jesus and the disciples' diet. And I want us to understand that it can be extremely beneficial to us as well. Now, there's a wide variety of clean fish out there. Some people might not like it because of the smell, but I ask you to consider the benefits to consuming clean fish. Now, depending on your location, the catch may vary. Here in Montana, we don't have a huge variety of fish, but there is variety out there. Usually you have to go to one of the grocery markets like Albertsons to get a variety of fish. The places like Costco usually only have like two or three kinds that are actually clean. There are several extremely beneficial components in fish that is known as the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, a study of more than 13,000 men revealed that the risk of dying from a heart attack was approximately 40% lower for those who ate fish regularly. Now, most fish, they have high-quality protein. They're a good source of zinc, of copper, and magnesium, and B vitamins, and much, much more. Now, studies have shown that fish consumption has been shown to thin blood, protect arteries, inhibit blood clot formation, lower LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, lower blood pressure, fight inflammation, ease symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis, help regulate the immune system, relieve migraine headaches, soothe bronchial asthma, and combat early kidney disease. And that's just what the studies have shown. There may be many more benefits to consuming fish. Now, the only problem that we may run into is that mankind has polluted many of our waterways through industry and sometimes through sewage. And so we have to make sure that we cook fish properly also, it might be a good idea to become aware of where the fish was caught so that we can eliminate any contaminants. Now, despite this, I do believe the reason to eat fish, it far outweighs the reasons that we might choose not to. Let's go over to Daniel in chapter 1. I do believe that we should consume a certain amount of meat, and I think that this should include fish, fowl, and a smaller portion, I believe, of red meat, maybe having it a serving every couple of weeks, possibly a bit more. Meat contains what is referred to as complete proteins. In order to get complete proteins from vegetables, we would have to use a certain combination of them with legumes. And actually, soy is one of the few foods that does have a complete protein built right into it. But I would stress, however, that the greatest benefit for our health, it does come from eating fruits, vegetables, grains, and legumes. Now, a good example of this comes from the prophet Daniel. And in Daniel 1, we're going to read a good portion of the first chapter here, because I think it's very interesting. Where it says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and he besieged it. And the Eternal gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding, science, and such as had the ability of them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, and at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. And so Daniel, it's not exactly known, but it's likely Daniel was aware that there were unclean foods in the king's regular menu, that he ate unclean meats, or possibly there was unclean meats used in the sauces or something that was being prepared. Maybe they prepared pork and then cooked chicken right on top of the same skillet, like we're aware that we're not supposed to do. In any case, Daniel did not want to eat of the king's delicacies, and so he asked the eunuch to not give me that food to eat. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children of which are of sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. So in other words, I have to feed you this food. You know, if you don't eat it, you're going to become ill. You'll become sick from lack of food. And the king's going to see that you're sick, and I'm going to get punished for it. You have to eat this food. And then said Daniel in verse 11 to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants. That is, let's do an experiment here. I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. And then let our countenances be looked upon before thee and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. And so Daniel requested that they receive pulse to eat. Now, pulse is something that is sown. It is food that is grown. So it could have been any combination of grain, fruit, vegetables, and legumes. Any of the herb-bearing seed or the tree-yielding seed. And this is what he wanted to eat. And he said, let's eat this for 10 days. And if we look sick in your eyes after 10 days, then we'll do something else. But give us a test here. Let's give this a trial run and see how it goes. So the prince of the eunuchs in verse 14 consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in the flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. So they looked even better off. They looked healthier. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and he gave them pulse to eat. And so I do believe that we should consider a certain portion of meat. This should include fish and fowl and some red meat. But I would stress that these are not the only things we should base our diet upon. Our diet should actually evolve around it, and those should be smaller portions in what we eat. And I think this example in Daniel here shows us that these four men, they actually lacked nothing by eating only fruits, vegetables, and grains, and possibly legumes, which is likely because you can get complete proteins by combining these things. In fact, their health was even better than those who ate the king's food. And so these are, I think, are very good biblical examples of what kind of foods that we should also strive to partake of. I know that's what some people might be thinking. They might think, well, you know, times have changed. We live in a very different time than they did. A lot of the food we eat today is prepared much differently than it was in the past. What we eat is, in fact, very different. But I ask us to consider, have times changed for the better? I think we all know the answer to that. No, things have not changed for the better. They have gotten worse and worse, and much of what most of society eats today has also gotten worse and worse. Foods that are not considered unclean in their nature, I think, have been made unclean in a certain sense by deep frying, by candy coating, by adding things to it that are not helpful, that actually do us harm. Fast food and processed foods, they're greatly lacking in what our body truly needs. And they are what is considered energy dense, meaning there's lots of carbohydrates in them. You can get quick energy from them, but you get very little benefit in what they have to offer, long-term benefit. They're not nutrient dense. And I'd like us to consider another cause for obesity in this nation. And it is because food cravings are usually a sign of nutrient deficiency. When our bodies are craving something that it needs to maintain homeostasis, we want to eat. We get a trigger to eat to try to obtain it. And if we don't receive what our body wants, we continue to eat. And because many of the foods today lack adequate nutrients, people just eat more and more in an attempt to become healthy.
It's built in. Our bodies want to be healthy.
But we don't know exactly how to do it, so we just keep eating what's presented. And in so doing, a lot of people gain weight in striving to actually get healthy. And then there's another reason, and that is because the animals we eat are actually very high in fat, most of them. Wild animals contain about 4% fat. Cows today contain 30% fat, depending on exactly how they are raised. Now, in addition, many animals, as most of us are aware, are injected with hormones to pump them up, to make their flesh fatter, to make them appear more succulent. And these conditions allow them to become more susceptible to illness and overcrowding. And so we have problems with contamination of meat today. We had the most recent mad cow disease, which they're still trying to eradicate. It's not totally out of our meat market. And also, because techniques are not kosher, slaughterhouses leave room for bacterial contamination when there's improper butchering allowed. Fish also, as I pointed out, can be contaminated in lakes and rivers and oceans by industrial waste. But also consider that when they're raised in farms, their flesh is less healthy. They're actually not able to be as active as they would in the wild, and so they're not able to sweat off toxins like they can in the wild. I mean, scales were there for a reason. They were built on the fish for a protective garment from toxins, and they're also made so that the fish is able to sweat off toxins. God designed them that way. And in a fish farm, they're not able to do it as well. Now, can these examples be a type of the physical concept of the unclean and the clean? I think there might be something to it. We think that we're a sophisticated society today, but our intellectualism, it has led us into devising ways to disobey God. And this brings great suffering and pain and illness to humanity as the result of our covetousness, as a result of our greed. And our technology has actually seemed to do more harm to the human race as it has good. In fact, in the 1930s, Dr. Weston Price studied the diets of primitive peoples, and he found that these people who had never ever seen a toothbrush, never even heard of brushing their teeth, had less than 1% of tooth decay. Less than 1%. In addition, he found that there were little to no instances of cancer, disease, or gastrointestinal problems. However, once processed food was introduced to them, tooth decay and disease quickly followed. Now, on the other hand, our sophisticated societies are riddled with cavities, with gum disease, and a multitude of terminal illnesses. And this is not an accident. I don't think that we have simply stumbled across the way we process foods today. I do believe that the state of the food industry is a result of Satan's handiwork. I believe that because he wants us dead. He's fighting his battle on many fronts. He's assaulting the family of wholesome family values. He is attacking our freedom by convincing us that we should be free to remove God from our lives. And he is trying to kill us slowly by the food we eat. Now, there's a final point I'd like us to consider. And that is what we choose to eat, it may be a reflection of what we are like on the inside. Something to think about. Our physical food, it does reflect the state of our health. But could it be that it also has a reflection upon our spiritual state? Now, if we usually eat fast food all the time, might this reflect on our spirituality in a way that we don't give ourselves time for lengthy prayer? We don't make time for study, and we just give God a quick few sentences here and there and maybe grab a verse while we're on the go? There was a church member that made an interesting comment one time when attending services in the LA area. And this gentleman, he was being called, and he was very zealous and highly excited and anticipated going to services and socializing with God's people. But as he visited, he was quickly disappointed. And he stated this. He stated that the people were coming to services empty, hoping to be filled spiritually by the sermon. And he was saddened by this. And he said, these people should be coming to services filled, being filled throughout the week and ready to share. And I ask us to consider if what we eat correlates with other areas of our lives. You know, Christian living, it's healthy living. It's healthful living in mind, in body, and in spirit. And our body is to be like a temple, as the scriptures say, and not a temple of trash, but a temple for God's Holy Spirit. Now, I don't want us to look at our neighbors, at our friends and our families, and think that because they might be overweight, we'll see them as weak, as sinners, as not living life properly. They are actually victims of the system, as we are also much of the time victims of the system. They are victims established by greed, and we are all weak. We are all sinners at times, aren't we? I just want us to recognize that we can make a difference in our health by choosing to eat that which God intended instead of that which Satan and this world actually tries to feed us. And so, with that in mind, I want to give us just a few examples of some things we can do to actually improve our diet and our health. When we go to the market, and that's to choose untampered, nutrient-dense food. Now, this is going to require some of us to learn how to read food labels. And it's not very difficult. It's really not difficult once you get used to it. And then once you start getting used to choosing those right foods, you reach for them every time you go to the shelf. Every time you go through the aisle, you know which ones are the good ones to get. And that we should also avoid foods that have been processed or refined. Now, when we have to purchase canned, boxed, or packaged items, because we do, choose the ones that have less of these harmful ingredients. Now, food labels are not like the ingredients at a restaurant on a menu where you look at the dish and it's got all these this list of all these things they put in the dinner that you can be served. And it just we drool over it. It's not the same when it comes to food labels. I'd ask us to consider that when we look at the labels of food, less actually is better for us. Less ingredients is more benefit. Another thing is to shop on the edges of the market. And so I think most of us may already be aware that the edges of the market is where the whole and the fresh foods are, most of them. And so you go into a market and you'll see on one side you've got the fruits and the vegetables, those things that can spoil. On another side you have the milk and the cheese and the fresh juices. And then towards the back usually you have the butcher area that has all the fresh meats.
These are the areas where we should do most of our grocery shopping.
You know, it was Mr. Armstrong that said we should eat the foods that spoil and eat them before they spoil. And that's some words, good words of advice. And also we should increase our consumption of fruits and vegetables. Now, despite what many may believe, there are actually, and I looked this up, I researched it, there are relatively few that have been genetically tampered with. There are, really, just a few. And the list is most soybean, actually, has been genetically tampered with, about 60% of the corn, about half of papaya, and some sugarcane, sugar beet, and some rice. And that's it. That's it. Everything else that we find in the market, in the fruits and vegetables section, is exactly the way God intended it to be, except for the fact that some farmers don't obey the law of the rest of the land, so that might take some of the vitamins and nutrients out of the soil. But it, regardless, the food, for the most part, has not been genetically tampered with. Another thing is to choose wild meats, wild fish, vegetarian-fed beef, or free-range animal products. You know, packages of eggs will say on the package, free-range. You know, they want to advertise this because they want to say, look, we're doing something that's actually good for the animals and good for you. And so also packages of meat, if they're vegetarian-fed or free-range, they're going to put it on the package. That's something to promote. And when you're buying fish, it'll always say on there whether it was farmed or whether it's wild. And most of the time, it'll actually say where it was caught, where the fish was caught. It'll give the name of a lake or a river or the ocean that it was caught in. And that can be very helpful. And the last thing is to consume whole grain in organic foods. Now, these might cost more at times. And in the time where people are struggling to get by, it might be more difficult to buy whole organic foods. But I admonish us to try to do so, because if we keep feeding the system our dollars, it's never going to offer us anything else. And these other foods, they are available right now.
The more of us that choose to buy them, the more available they will become.
Maybe one day they'll actually be the same price as the processed foods. I don't know. But we can hope for that. And so the typical American diet, it is a road to accelerated and unnatural death. Cancer is not natural. Diabetes is not natural. Obesity is not natural. We feed these diseases. We feed them. And we allow them to destroy us by the wrong foods that we eat. As the bread of life is being offered to us by Christ, I believe so are healthier foods. We simply have to choose to eat those. If we seek the bread that Christ gives to us, why not seek the bread today?
The food today that encourages life and does not slowly kill us.
You know, ultimately, our physical bodies are going to die. We will perish. But does God want us to speed up the process?
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you'd like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we'd like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. We also invite you to visit our website at www.eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.